So we discuss something stealing. Right? What is that for? Okay, something which relates to our life every day. Almost. It's called how to give great advice. Okay? I hope in 45 minutes, 40 minutes, you guys are all going to be better advice givers than you were right now. That's important. Now, why is it important to give good advice? Well, from a Torah perspective, there are a few things involved. First off, there is a lav, a negative prohibition directly related to giving bad advice. The Torah tells us, lifnei iver lo sisa michshol, in front of a blind person, do not put a stumbling block. Right? What's a stumbling block? So the Gemara tells us a stumbling block is bad advice. Bad advice is one of the examples of a stumbling block, right? Misleading someone, giving bad business advice, bad dating advice, bad marriage advice, bad life advice is a stumbling block. Okay? Is that all it is? Just something negative? No, it's very positive. Right? This is not as direct, but v'ahavta l'rech kamocha, right? What does kamocha mean, guys? You have to love your neighbor as yourself. Huh?
I don't know enough Hebrew yet.
Okay, good. That's fine. V'ahavta l'rech kamocha. I'll teach you a little. V'ahavta l'rech kamocha. You have to love your neighbor as yourself. And part of loving someone is you want him to give you good advice. So if you love him, you will give them good advice. You're fulfilling that by giving good advice. Also, this is a little bit more of a step. We know that one of the central things we have to do in our life, and one of the central things, themes, which pushes all of our Beit Am L'Chaver, our man between man mitzvot, is Valachta Bedrachav, going in his ways, going the ways of God, right? So I was thinking, maybe also God gives good advice. We have to be like God and give good advice. Who says God gives good advice? I mean, I'm sure if you gave advice, it would be good, but when does God give good advice? So it's interesting. The Torah, well, who says the Torah's advice?
Well, I mean, it's the guidelines on how to live your life.
Right. The Torah, in fact, I think our rabbis call every mitzvah atzin. The mitzvahs are called etzot. Etzot is advice. The mitzvahs are called advice because they're advice on how to bring yourself to live the best life. Best life down here, and the best life that's going to light us up in the world to come. So the whole Torah is like, so there's no better advice giver than God. So perhaps we can say, again, I haven't seen this directly anywhere, but Balachta Bedrach, to go in his ways, we have to give good advice also. Okay, so it's a pretty hefty thing. Besides that, everybody knows all human relations revolves around giving good advice. People are asking each other all the time, where should I go for Shabbos? What should I eat? What should I learn? What should I do in my class? Should I stay with this rabbi? Go with another rabbi? Right? A lot of, and especially among students, things that people wouldn't necessarily feel comfortable all the time going to Rabbi Elsan about, or don't want to have to make the step to climb the high mountain to get to their rabbis, right? Their friends, you can give advice to each other. When you get good advice, when you get good at giving advice to each other, you can probably give good advice to yourself even, right? This is really a pervasive, very relevant topic. Okay? Cool. Good. We go forward. So the first thing, we need some definition of terms. I always like to say like this. Clarification, not counsel. Clarification, not counsel. Do you know in Torah, in Yiddishkeit, how old does somebody have to be when they're endowed with the unique ability to give advice? That's very interesting. The Mishnah in Avot, the Mishnah in Ovis, talks about different stages which a person gets to. A 20-year fit for this, a 30-year this. 30, I think, is Koach. 40 is Ariel Sant. 40 is, and 50 is Eitzah. 50! I'm 44, right? It means I'm not there yet. But I've been giving good advice. So what's going on? A lot of advice. And if I say good advice, I've been giving a lot of advice. So what's going on? It says you're only fit for advice when you're 50. So what is that? So here's a very interesting thing. The word Eitzah, what word sounds like Eitzah? It's great, we're doing a little Hebrew. The word Eitzah sounds like what other word? If you shorten the word Eitzah, what do you get? Eitz. Right? Eitzah, Eitz. What's an Eitz? A tree. What's the connection between counsel and a tree?
Wisdom.
Wisdom tree? Interesting. So Eitz is something in Halacha, right, that doesn't have a taste. Certain things have tastes. Eitz, if you mix up some wood in your meat, right? Let's say it's a tree which is prohibited, like a tree which is worshipped for Avodah Zarah, for idol worship, right? And it gets mixed in. Now, if I take some pig and mix it into my challant, the challant's no good if it's at the right level. If I take some wood and I mix it into my challant, It doesn't. If I can get the particles of the eights out, it's not a problem, because eights is something which doesn't have a taste, doesn't have a time. Now, what does it mean? What does it mean? Wisdom that doesn't have taste. This is really cool. There's a higher level of understanding which people reach, right? They say they get it at 50, right? A person can give counsel from that higher level of wisdom. I know a lot more about the world than you. I understand a lot more about how things work there from you. And from that unique high place, I can endow you with wisdom, right? That's Eitza, right? That you only get a 50. But what we can do at this lower stage, right, is we can clarify for people. You get it? What do you mean to clarify? Clarify. What's going on? What are your options? What's available to you? Why should you do this or that? That's very different than me sitting on high and saying, this is the right way to go. I don't know if you've ever had it. I had that sometimes. Did you ever like suddenly get hit and you know something? Right? You just think that this is the right way to do it. A lot of times we're wrong, right? Oh, I'm sure she's going to have a girl. Right? I'm sure she's going to have a boy. Right? And you're totally wrong. And you're so convinced. But sometimes you think and you're right. You know? Right, it doesn't mean we're necessarily psychic, right? But sometimes a person has a certain sense about things. So Eitza is like that. Eitza, the high level Eitza, the high level counsel is that. So I say that's not our job. We're 50, we'll talk about it. Come back, okay? I'll be probably about 70 when you guys are 50, and we'll talk about it. Maybe you'll tell me by then what Eitza is, right? But our job as friends of people is not to counsel, but to clarify. Now, what does it mean to clarify? And why should we do it? Now, if it's only clarifying, why should we do it? Why does a person need us? Let him clarify for himself, right? Now, how basic is it that we clarify for others? You guys know the Mir Yeshiva over here, just 20 minutes away, right? Massive Torah institution. Mir happens to be one of the oldest yeshiva. It started, I think, in the 1800s already, continues to this day. In the 1920s, they had a very, very famous figure there named Yeruchim Levavitz. Yeruchim Levavitz was a massive, massive Musar personality. Okay, he ran the yeshiva, and the greatest minds of Europe that were developing were like little boys in front of him. That's how they treated him. And he was a tremendously bright person, tremendously insightful person, person who worked on himself in every which way, right? He used to say, go ask a simple non-Jew in the shuk, in the marketplace, what to do. You don't know what to do? Go to the wagon maker, right? Go to the auto mechanic and go ask him, what should I do? Right? And he himself, they say, used to do this. He would go ask simple people. Now, why would someone as brilliant as Rabbi Yochum go ask someone as simple as a car mechanic? No offense to car mechanics, right? I would also be a car mechanic, right? But,
hey,
right?
I'm a car mechanic.
You're a car mechanic, right? Beautiful, right? But why would Rabbi Yochum ask a car mechanic, right, or someone simple, what to do? Because what is the key thing which someone else has which I don't have?
Subjective.
Objectivity, right? Objectivity. It could be as simple as anything, right? But when I have... when I'm not objective, I could miss everything. Blind spot, you ever hear people having a blind spot? What does a blind spot mean? Everybody in the world sees this thing about you. Everybody realizes about you. And you're smarter than them. You have a higher IQ than them. You're a better thinker than them. You play chess and they don't. You learn Gemara at a deep level. And they don't know how to. They've never developed their minds. Right? And you have a blind spot and they don't. Because they're seeing you objectively. You can't see yourself always objectively. And you can't see your situations objectively. Right? And therefore, that's why our role is so essential, right? Just hear a different perspective. You don't always have to listen. I don't believe that Rabbi Yeruchim would always take the advice that was offered by that simple person in the marketplace, right? But he knew that by hearing something else, that can open up and give him a level of understanding that he would be missing on himself because he is subjective about him. So we're all subjective about ourselves. Not a single person is not subjective about themselves. So hearing an objective view. So now to that extent, that's our job. Our job is to help people clarify the issues at hand. Right? Not to sit back and think we have the wise counsel of a 50-year-old. No, I'm going to help clarify the issue that's in front of for you. What are the possibilities here? What's the different ways you could go about this thing? What's the flow? You're angry at your father, right? Okay, so how do we deal with that? Oh, your father, what should we do? How do we deal with it? How do we think about it? How do you deal with this problem? Are you having a problem with your father? I don't know, I can't see he's a jerk. Okay, but what do you do? I don't know, I can't see he's a jerk. Well, let's think a little wider. Let's open up the topic, you know. When have you had a good relationship with your father? When have you had a bad relationship with your father? What does your father do that really gets you upset? What would your father have to do to make you feel better? How do you contribute to the problem with your father? Maybe, right? We'll talk about that. Clarify the topic for him. Now, that's number one. Clarification, my friends, not counsel. Now, when do we lose our ability? I want to hear two possibilities. When do we lose our ability to clarify for others correctly?
When there's probably like, when it involves us, I guess, as well.
Beautiful. Because when we're not objective, right? If our whole plus on them is our objectivity, so not all the times are we objective ourselves. We have a subjective interest in what's going on, right? Now, it might not be as obvious, right? But we could be also subjective. And when we are subjective, since our whole plus is our objectivity, we've lost our whole plus, and it's time for us to take a step back and say, maybe you should ask someone else, okay? Now, that's a very subtle thing to realize that we're subjective to someone else's. I'll give you an example, right? I'm running for student president, right? I'm running for Rebbe president. I want to be the president of the Rebbes, right? It's me against Rabbi Elsin, huh? So Rabbi Elsin says, you know what? Rabbi Rossman says, you know what, I want to be your secretary. So I said, that's an interesting idea. So I'll run with Rabbi Rossman. Maybe I'll win, huh? But what? Now, and Rabbi Rossman comes and asks me, do you think it's a good idea to me to run for secretary? So I say like this, you know what, I love Rabbi Rossman, but, you know, I start giving the advice, but inside of me, something is awakening in me. I'm a little uncomfortable with him being a secretary, right? The secretary of the rabbi council. Now, the reason I'm uncomfortable is something about me. When I feel uncomfortable, it's about me usually. And now it could be a lot of reasons. It could be because maybe I'm worried Rabbi Rossman will take too much credit for what goes on. Maybe I just don't like sitting in meetings with him. Maybe I don't want him around for a lot of reasons, even though he's my friend, right? So when he's asking me, should I run for secretary? All those things come up. I don't necessarily realize it unless I'm honest with myself. And when I say to him, you know what, I don't think it's a good idea for you, but you're too busy already, I don't think you'll have time to be secretary, it's really my, what we call in Hebrew, negiot, my proclivities, my subjectivity, which is causing me not to see things in a clear way for him, right? Even though it's not obvious. Let's take a more subtle example of what a negiot could do, of what our proclivity do. Someone comes to speak to you about their bad relationship with their father, right? Now, if you've had a bad relationship with your father, when someone comes to speak to you about their bad relationship with their father, what comes up to you? Your bad relationship with your father, right? And now, in your bad relationship with your father, the problem was your father was like this. So you just kind of like naturally assume that's what's going on with him. But it's not necessarily at all what's going on with him, right? You've also lost your objectivity because it's such a hot topic to you, such an emotional topic to you, such a meaning-laden topic to you that you can't be objective for that person anymore. We together, right? And all of you could find in your own life when this happens in many, many ways that we're not objective. We think we're objective. People are very fast to say, I'm objective. I'm the objective opinion here. But our whole life is so intertwined with other people's lives and intertwined with so many things that without realizing it, without knowing it, we are not objective. Okay, and if we want to help, again, our topic is giving good advice. If we want to help others and give correct advice to others, we have to somehow be honest about when our subjectivity is rising, right? And to realize when it's rising that we're not fit to be giving the advice or the clarification. Cool? Now, one sign, which I think is a good sign of us not being objective, right, is like when you have that uncomfortable feeling when someone comes to speak to you about something. You hear? Why do you feel uncomfortable? Why doesn't it feel right? How come it doesn't feel good? Right? So usually it's not because you think it's bad for him. Usually when we don't feel right about something, I don't mean that we think it's not right, when we're uncomfortable. Usually when you have an uncomfortable feeling, it means that you have a negia. It means you're not objective anymore. That speak to you? Can you hear that? You know what I mean? You just like, How he's asking an objective question. Should I be secretary? Why doesn't that feel good to me? Why doesn't that, right? If it doesn't feel good to me, it usually doesn't feel good to me because I'm thinking about me, not about him.
Because you want to be there.
Because I want, or I don't want him. Mm-hmm. Okay, I think that's a true point. Okay, so that's category number one. Category number two is related, but a little different. Even if I'm not subjective in terms of my interests.
Well, I mean, I just want to add to that. Sometimes
sure.
I feel uncomfortable when somebody's giving advice because they could be like
generally respected person in the community, maybe have a title, whether it be psychologist, doctor, rabbi, it doesn't matter.
Can't right.
Into the community, and they sit down thinking that they're going to give you advice on something that they truly know nothing about, or they're wrong, or
okay, that's.
But you're nodding and you're uncomfortable.
No, I'm not. I'm talking about when you're subject matter. Right. I'm talking about when you're the advice giver, not when you're the advice receiver. When you, the advice giver, feel uncomfortable with the question. That's often a right when yeah sorry when you're being asked and you're uncomfortable by the question, it's often a sign that that's a sign to you that it's your okay, cool. Okay, so next this is related, but not because I'm not subjective because I have an interest, but I'm too emotional. Who's the worst person to deal with a suicide victim? Not a suicide victim, a potential suicide attempter, right? Someone's up there on the roof, wants to jump. Who's the last person you want up there with them?
A woman.
A woman? Okay.
You know somebody
who can be emotional.
Good. Emotional. Family members. Family members are the worst people to be dealing with suicide victims. Because they're gonna make them jump. Because their emotions are gonna push him over, right? When you're emotional,
he's probably jumping sometimes because of them as well. So they're just gonna push you.
That's also true, right? So their emotion. When you're too emotional, right? When you're too emotional, you can't clarify. Isn't that exactly what emotions do? Emotions make us see things in a certain way, which is far from the reality. The whole point of what I have over the other person is my reality check, my clarification. When I get too emotional, it's a hot topic for me. I have no subjective interest in what happens, but that's a hot topic by me, right? And I get emotional about it, so then I can't be objective anymore. My rabbi told me, other people's problems go until the button. That's it. They go until your button. Because when problems go too deeply in, you can't be objective to help other people solve them. I just saw Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, was a great, one of the great Gedolim in America, said about himself that he lets other people's problems go in a quarter of an inch. If you would let them go in more, he couldn't be objective anymore and he couldn't help them. What an unbelievable statement. On the one hand, what a wonderful thing it is that people feel that we're together with them in their problems, right? But did you ever have that when you go to speak to someone about your problem? You want a way out of your problem, right? You don't want someone to sit and cry with you. Sometimes you just want someone to sit and cry with you, right? But a lot of times what you want is, the Talmud tells us in Brachot, that Ein Chavash Matir Asurim Et Atzmo Beis Asurim. A person who's tied down can't get himself out, right? You're stuck. You're looking for that objectivity. You're looking for someone to give you the way, someone to show you how to get out of this, right? And they just sit and cry and talk about how terrible it is together with you, but you want objectivity. You want a way out. Hold on a second. So you have to be careful, like Rabbi Yaakov said, not to be emotional. Okay, so that's section one. What do we have, my friends? Of how to give great advice. First of all, let's change the term. We're not giving counsel, giving clarification. Clarification, not counsel. When are we disqualified? When we are too emotional or have interests. Those two things disqualify us from clarification because then we are no better than them, really. Okay? The other thing, just in terms of, you have to get the story straight. You have to ask a lot of questions. Get the details. Understand what's going on. Right? And you have to know how to process and analyze. That's a more complex thing. For that, how to learn to analyze well, I suggest you spend a lot of time in the morning learning how to read Talmud well. Learn the Gemara. Right? The more someone is learning Gemara trains a person in how to break down information, look at things in a straight way, and bring out the points when you need to be brought out. Because you could ask all the wrong questions. Right? You ever hear someone talk about a topic and feel like he's picking up on all the wrong questions, not the right questions? There are important big things to speak about, talking about the small things. So Talmud trains us in how to think correctly. Okay? And if we're talking about clarification, the more clearly we can think, the more clearly we can clarify for others. Okay, that's section one. Any questions?
Yeah. So surely, like, if you're a friend,
yeah,
and the person's asking you for advice, like, are you not really, like, emotionally involved? Like, surely you should
good.
Not be able
Very
to...
good. Excellent question. Are you always, when someone's coming to ask you advice, it's your friend, so it means you're emotionally involved. So, excellent question. That's the point. Since you are still disconnected, you have the ability to turn off your emotion a little bit. But you're right. If you're too emotional, then you have to realize you're not going to be able to give a good advice. You have to try to turn yourself off a little bit. He is so heated, he can't. You're less heated, so you have the ability, often, to turn off your emotion where he can't. Right? If it's such a heated topic to you, such a hot topic to you, then could be true that you're not a good advice giver. You have to say it. You can say it in one time. You know what? I'd love to help you. I feel your pain so much. This is the same problem I went through. I can't look at this objectively. What a great thing to say. What a great thing to say to someone, as opposed to like forging through and pushing through and making someone think that we're going to give great advice when we're not, because we're totally disqualified. We're just going to be an emotional wreck and go all around this problem, not be able to help them. Okay? Next thing. In order to give good advice, we have to be good listeners. Okay? Got to be good listeners. How can you give good advice if you don't get the question correctly, if you don't get the issue? Right? And I want to talk about a bunch of steps. I want to talk about a bunch of steps in being a good listener. Okay? One, you have to be focused. You have to be focused, right? If you're ADD, you guys look like decent listeners to me, right? If you're ADD, it's hard to listen well. That's an issue, right? You have to be focused. You have to be focused on somebody. Look at them, watch them, focus on them. Next is you have to be interested in what they're talking about, right? You have to be interested, right? Sometimes I can be I'm very focused, right? But that doesn't interest me at all, right? It interests me a lot. I just don't know how to be focused. Those are two separate qualities. Being focused and being interested are two totally separate qualities. So you need both in order to listen well. Three, don't jump into other people's sentences, right? A lot of times we think, oh, I got the story already, right? I got it. Hear a person out. First off, for two reasons. One, you'll learn a lot more than you think you know already by letting him speak something out fully, right? Two, he'll feel more like he can talk to you if he feels that he's not getting cut off, right? We're so common to cut people off that we're used to that, but we're in a sensitive listening position and situation. We have to be able to hear someone out and let them speak fully. Okay, so that's three. Number three. Number four. Who knows what number four is? What blocks us from listening well? I'm interested. I'm focused. I'm not entering his words. What could be lacking?
Body language.
Good. Great. I'll talk about that in a second. Beautiful. You know what could block it still? You're planning your response. Huh? He says half a sentence, and I'm already planning my response. Oh, I'm going to answer
mentally
this.
Cutting him off.
Mentally, nice. Mentally cutting him off, right? So I really am focused on the general conversation. I am interested. My friend, I want to help him, right? I'm not saying anything which stops him calls. He thinks it, right? But mentally, that's a very nice word. Mentally, I'm cutting him off because I'm thinking so much about what I'm going to answer. Now, so you have to learn to listen fully and calm your brain a little bit, which is grasping for the answers. Now, I want to tell you guys a big novel thing, which is not popular today, in order to how to deal with this problem of planning responses in the middle. Why do we plan responses as other people speak? So sometimes because we have fast minds, you know, that mind is a very, very quick computer, very wonderfully aggressive and quick machine. But why else? You know why? Because, well, when else am I supposed to think about my response? Why? Because we live in a world which moves so quickly, we think we have to answer immediately. Right? How about trying this? Did you ever have this on the phone? Someone asks you a question on the phone, and you think for 15 seconds about what they said. What's the next thing that happens? After you think... What?
Yeah.
Are you there? Are you listening? Yes, I'm listening, and I'm there, and that's why I'm thinking about what you're saying. Right? It's not a popular thing to have a space in time between one person talks and one person answers, right? And of course, internet and technology ruins us even more in this way because everything is so quick and image so fast, there's no space and no time to answer and to think about things and to speak like that. Wouldn't that be a nice way to speak? What do you think about, what ice cream do you like better? Chocolate. Well, why do you like chocolate better? I think it's a richer taste. It's a fuller taste than vanilla. Right? No, that's not We're so quick, and so we're trained to answer so quickly. So therefore, we must think of our answers while the other person's talking, because we're not allowed to have any space between the end of his sentence and our response. If we would teach ourselves and believe and train ourselves that we can have a space between the person speaking and our response, so we won't feel so much pressure. Okay? Let me just finish this section. I'll take questions. Right? So try it one time. You'll shock your friends. They won't know what to do with you. Right? You'll cause a revolution in the world by taking a second between speech and response. Okay? So that's number four. Number five is what Dimitri said, body language. Right? Are you in a listening position? Right? I'll give you a good example. Right now, you're going to fall asleep soon. Right? Because there's no way you can keep that position, keep listening, right? That is a good listening position. It's a relaxed position, right? But that is a listening position. Here, try this thumb, some basic NLP. If you ever stand up, throw your shoulders back and feel depressed. Oh, I'm so depressed. You can't feel depressed when you do that. That's great. Life's wonderful. That's what you naturally feel when you smile. You know, it gets the things going in your mind. You feel good, right? Our body position is so important in so many ways, right? You're there to play. You're there to win. Right? There's a listening position. So again, you don't have to want to listen, but assuming that you're focused and you're interested and you want to listen and it's important to you, this person's issues, if you really want to be listening, you have to be in a listening position. Right? Again, listening position is a personal question. For one person, this is a listening position. For one person, that's a listening position. But if you want to be a good listener, you have to be in a listening position. So a quick review. Five steps, I believe we said, for good listening. Be focused. Stay focused. Be interested. Don't cut off. Don't mentally cut off by planning a response, right? Side point there that we learned is that I'm allowed to wait between a question and my response, right? Number five, be in a physical position which says that I'm there to listen. Okay? Yeah.
Oh, with that one, with the don't plan your response, I feel like sometimes the other person is like hanging on edge waiting for the response. They finish their speech and then they want their medicine real quick.
Right. Excellent. Excellent. What's your name?
Alex.
Right. Excellent question. The person wants to hear the response quickly. So what would I answer? You're right, he does, and that's part of the pressure. Right? But if I'm going to answer him more correctly by taking a second, right, let's ask, what does he really want? Does he want a fast response? What does he want more? Does he want a fast response or does he want a correct response? When you phrase it like that, so for sure you'd be willing. You can even say sometimes, you know, just let me think about that for a second. Let me think about that. I see you'd like me to answer, right? Well, let me think about it a second. That's an important question. Sometimes you're even allowed to say, I'll think about it and I'll get back to you, right? It's a very big problem. This is a very pervasive thing, the fact that the world works so quickly to us today, right? That we're so trained to have to move. So many things are lost that we don't, you know. Rav Hunder, one of the great rabbis, said once that if you ever heard the blow of the A train, something like that, you'll never reach the levels of spiritual completion and happiness which the earlier generations had. Right? His exact language was, if you heard the whistle of the A train, you won't reach the menuchas and nefesh of the Yisod v'Shar Shavoda. Right?
Are you talking about the A train in Washington Heights?
Yeah, I don't know if it's the A or the I or one of the trains, you know. Okay. That was, you know, 40 years ago he said such a statement. We have to realize that, like, we lose so much by the way the mind's working today. It's a very dangerous thing. We don't appreciate it. It's not dangerous in the way that a lot of the dangers of the internet are spoken about, you know, gambling addictions, other addictions, right? But this is a more subtle but yet very dangerous thing, that we're losing our minds in a certain way. We're losing our ability to think and to hear, to experience others, and to speak to others. And to have normal conversations, have normal relationships. This is what you know, people who are in teaching are talking about all the time in high schools and things like this. Not, you know, my little crusade here at 341 together with you guys. Okay, so that's I call that level, that's called good listening. Five steps to good listening. After that, there's another level. Every person can achieve that, can be a good listener. Okay? But past that, there's another level called, I'll call it deep, being a deep listener, being a great listener, right? So for being a great listener is a whole other level. For that, you have to really, like, hear what people are saying, what they're not saying, right? What they're really thinking. That's so ready. There's a level past that, right? How to really hear what's going on, you know? Ask a deeper question. Go a little bit more fully and deeper into the issue. You understand what I'm saying? That's the one's harder to speak about. It's more maybe a natural talent or would need a lot more work than, you know, an hour class, right? But good listening is something all of us can accomplish. We could all be focused. We could all be interested. We could all not cut off other people, right? We can all not be planning our responses, and we can all put ourselves in a mode that we are listening well, right? But past that, you have to know there is another level, okay? Next point. In our responses, we have to be realistic. This is my personal feeling and vendetta. Right? A lot of advice givers don't give realistic advice, right? You can take care of any problem. It'll all be okay simply, right? Just do this. Right? You're not, when you're unrealistic with people, you're basically irresponsible with them. A responsible person is a realistic person, right? Because you're dealing with a real issue, a person's coming to you with a real problem, and you have to deal with it in a real way. You know, we're together? And it's very easy, we don't realize sometimes, it's very easy for us to be unrealistic, you know? So what about, what's a financial problem? But when we're unrealistic, we're not going to give good advice. We're going to put, being unrealistic very often itself is a stumbling block. Right? Because he's coming to you for a wake-up call. He's coming to you for clarification. And you are mixing things up by giving him unrealistic expectations or unrealistic sense of what's going on. Now, there's something called sometimes a person needs strength and needs to be helped and needs to be made feel good. That's something else, right? But I'm talking about someone who's coming to you advice, someone's coming to you for clarification. That person, you have to think, like, what are his abilities? What can he do? What can't he do? Someone asks you about a diet, right? So you have a friend who's heavy. You've been thinking for months that he needs a diet. You would love him to go on a diet. Now he says to you, what kind of diet should I go on? So you go and tell him something unrealistic. Oh, it's going to be easy for you. You're going to do it. It'll be great. You know, cut out all carbs. And he'll be all excited. He'll walk out happy. And you've done nothing for him. You have to think, you know, okay, let's try to think. What's a realistic diet plan for you? Right, you're not dietitians. I'm not saying you have to be a dietitian, right? But being a thinking person, having a good computer, you can think, this guy loves to eat, right? I have to deal with the fact he loves to eat, you know? How do I give him a diet together with the fact he loves to eat? Or maybe before he even gets to a diet, I have to deal with the fact why he loves to eat, what's lacking in his life, right? Well, why is food bringing him so much comfort? Why does he need so much comfort, right? Those are very basic questions. I asked it like that. You can deal with such a question. That's not, you don't have to be a genius for such a question, right? No. But if I'm unrealistic, I'm just going to tell him, oh, that's awesome. Go for it, right? Just do it, you know, and cut out everything. Don't eat it all. You've done nothing for him. You've given no advice. You've given no clarification. You've helped him. Not at all. Right? But if you would have taken a step back and thought for yourself in a realistic way, here's my friend. I know he loves to eat. I also love to eat. I know he doesn't have the greatest self-control, right? You know that. You know that about your friends. So you can start to think. Maybe you should eat, you know, at intervals of 2 hours. Maybe you should only take one plate of food. You try to think in realistic ways about what could help him, okay? Now, what's the danger of being unrealistic sometimes? Sometimes you don't want to give people a push. This is a very important side point. Very often, when someone comes to us for advice, they're opening themselves up to us, right? And they're letting us know about their inner world, right? So we have to be very, very sensitive about someone's inner world. Judaism, we believe that someone's inner world is the holy of the holy, right? The Jewish person is like the Beis HaMikdash, right? And his inner world, his heart, his mind, those are the inner sanctums, inner chambers. So when someone is asking us for advice, very often they're opening a window, a door into their inner world. We have to be very sensitive about that world, right? And respectful and sensitive and caring. And realistic. But a lot of times that gives an ability to give a little bit of a push in a certain direction that he needs. Or as we say, a kick in the pants, right? Your friend has an anger problem, right? He says he's coming to talk to you about his issue with his father, right? And he doesn't realize, because he has that blind spot, that part of the problem is his anger. And he gets so upset at his father, the second his father makes the smallest wrong move, he's all over him. Right? And then his father, it escalates. He doesn't see his role, right? So that's a time where you can then, you know, surgically talk to him about the fact that he that he's not coming to you for that. That's a difficulty. You speak to him realistically, right? You don't just make him feel like everything's great and he'll take care of all his problems simply, right? But on the other hand, it's a time where you can give a little push. You know, I think you got to work on your anger a little bit. I think the whole issue with your father will be a lot easier if you don't get so angry. Whoa. Right? So that's a little not easy to say to someone. Right? Dimitri's looking at me intensely now. Right? Imagine if I had to give you advice right now, saying that it was difficult, but Dimitri, I think you have an anger issue, right? You would say to me, Rabbi, you have an anger issue. That's a bitter pill, right?
I'm looking at you because I agree with you. I come into situations like that.
Right. No.
The advice you give them is going to hurt them.
It's going to hurt.
You don't want to be that person all the time.
Exactly. You don't want to be that person. You don't want to be the pusher. But a lot of times, that's exactly what they need. So you get the balance. Realistic. You don't tell them, you know, oh, you're going to get over all your problems. It's going to be great. Simple. But being realistic doesn't mean you don't give them the push that they need, the little tug, the pull or push or a little advice or tochacha, like we say, which is going to take them to the next level in themselves. That's unbelievable. And that, when you miss that, you waste an opportunity because you don't know when it's going to come back again, right? We all know it's hard to hear critique or to hear something which is not our way. But once he's already asking you a question, opening himself up to you, that is a time when you're uniquely poised to say something very meaningful to him. Okay? All right, we're almost there. I just want to make one or more 2 points. Next. You have to be humble. You have to be humble, right? Such an important thing. If you're not humble about your own abilities, what you know, what you don't know, you're always going to give bad advice. The Gemara tells us in Brachot, again, in Brachos, around this, La'olam Yoimar Adam Ein Yodea. A person has to be trained to say, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. See, on the one hand, when someone comes to you, he's putting you on a pedestal. You must know. That's why he's asking you advice. So now you've given me the benefit of the doubt that I know, and now for me to go and say, I don't know, that's putting myself down. You know, you've already elevated me. Now, as opposed to being elevated, I'm going to have to go mashpa myself and say, I don't know. That's terrible. Who wants to do that? But that's not being humble, right? If you're a humble person who's really interested in someone else's best, what's best for him, you'll be ready to say to him, I don't know. I'm not the person to answer this question. I'm not the person, right? Or, I really think competently about this. Or, I think this is the right way to go, but I'm not sure. Maybe you want to ask someone else. There's all, right? Those are all humble responses. The non-humble way, I know everything. Whatever you're going to hit here, this is going to be the right way. This is the clarification. Here's the issue. Here's the, right? Sometimes it's like that.
Advice is always up to the person anyway. He can either decide to take it.
Of course. But the way, very good. But the strength with which you offer the advice is going to affect how he thinks about it, right? I know I have students, right? If I say something, there are students, you know, unfortunately, you know, think that I can give them good advice. And trust me, you know, why they think that, I don't know. But that's what they think, right? So when I'm going to say something to them powerfully, they'll feel that they're making a grand mistake by going against what I say, right? If I say that, you know, I'm really not sure, or go ask someone else, they won't think that, right? So it's very, very different. That's a question of being humble, realizing it's two things, really. It's being humble, one, and i.e., you're humble, and two, not thinking you know everything, and not being afraid to expose yourself as someone who doesn't know everything. Those are the two sides, right? And again, like I said, it's psychologically, it's uniquely difficult for us to do that when someone's already offered themselves and asked us what we think, because that's a time, we all know that we're always looking to make ourselves a little smarter, a little better in other people's eyes, right? We're all like that, right? Everybody works, wants people to think higher about them. Only the most confident inner person doesn't care about that, right? But generally, we always do. So now, I'm always looking for that. And now here's a chance that someone already did that for me. He already valued me. He put me on a pedestal, and now I'm going to disappoint him? Oh, gosh, that's bad. But if you're a humble person, right, and you're not scared of other people's knowing you're humble, and you're interested in someone's best interest, so then you'll be willing to do that. So I think, my friends, that was great. It was a good, nice little session. So we have a lot of the building blocks now, if we take this seriously. A quick review, right? One, we got to know what we're doing. What are we doing? We're doing
clarification.
Clarification, not counsel. That's what good advice means, right? Why can we be the clarifiers too? Because we're objective. When do we lose the ability to clarify?
In our emotions.
When we're emotional or when we're subjective, right? When are we subjective? When we have an interest in what the question at hand is, right? How do we do it? We got to ask a lot of questions. We got to get the story very clear. On a higher level, how do we do it? By being an analytical machine. How are we analytical? Studying Talmud, my opinion, right? What do we have to do? We have to listen well. What are the steps of listening well? Focus, interest, not cutting off, not planning our responses, being in a physical position of listening. Past that, there's another level called deeper listening, which we're not getting so into, which is more important. After that, the type of advice and the type of, we have to be realistic with people, but we can give them that necessary nudge as they've opened themselves up to us, right? And finally, maybe most importantly, we have to be humble, right? And when we follow all these steps, we'll be able to help many, many people, because many, many people need advice. We all need advice ourselves, and we can give a lot of good advice. If we can follow these means, we'll be on our way to being great advice givers. Best of luck. That's a haraba.
Thank you. So what's the...